Hi, I'm Tim Peter, and welcome to Search Chat, Solo Segment's podcast dedicated to all things search, AI, and content marketing related. Who is Solo Segment? Well, we're a technology company focused on site search analytics and AI-driven content discovery to improve search results, increase customer satisfaction, and unlock revenue for your company. Solo Segment, make your search smarter. You can learn more at solosegment.com.
On this episode of Search Chat, Solo Segment CEO Steve Zaker and I discuss the must-have skills for B2B content marketers and why measurement is so crucial to the role. We also look at the Mary Meeker Internet Trends Report and what it says about your data. And finally, we talk about why personalization matters for customers today and how you can make it work for your business now. All that and more on the latest episode of Search Chat. Coming at you right about now.
Hey, Steve, how are you tonight?
I am excellent. First day back from vacation. A mountain of email, but I am well rested for it. So it's going to be a late night, but I'm good to go.
That's fantastic. Yeah, home. You went from home on the range to now a mountain of the email.
I did. You know, I really had a really early last week, Monday, Tuesday, very, very anxious because I was up in Yellowstone National Park in the mountains of Wyoming, zero connectivity. I'd occasionally get, you know, a stray cosmic ray would cause a text to be arrived, but
sure.
cell phone, no email. So it was both delightful and terrifying all at the same time.
That's fantastic. I'm glad to hear. Well, welcome back. We're glad to have you back. And there is just a ton of good stuff to talk about this time around.
The world continued to revolve while I was gone. It's fantastic.
It is shocking to me, too. I'm not going to lie. No one was more surprised than me. But I want to jump right in. We have a really interesting post that I thought would, you know, give you something to sink your teeth into now that you're back from vacation, from Top Rank Blog. Really good stuff. We love Top Rank Blog. They do a great job. Lee Auden and his team, you know, are longtime friends of the founders here and things like that. And they did a great job. But they had a fantastic post overall about the 12 must-have skills for B2B content marketers. Mm-hmm. And they broke it into two different groups, a set of four hard skills and a set of eight soft skills.
Right.
And I think overall it was good stuff, but I wanted to run the hard skills by you and see if they triggered any response whatsoever.
They occasionally do trigger me.
I'm twirling my mustache as I sit this up, because I suspect there's going to be, you know, some opinion here. But the four hard skills were search engine optimization, social media marketing, influencer marketing, and measurement. And, you know, just curious for your take on that and how those resonate with you.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. I was at several conferences over the past couple of weeks. Two come to mind, the Conductor Conference C3, which, gosh, was probably now about four or five weeks ago. And then I was at the Marketing Analytics Summit 2 weeks ago. And, you know, it was interesting. Of course, you'd expect that at Conductor's conference, they talk a lot about SEO.
Of course.
But it was also surprising at Marketing Analytics Summit, you know, what used to be web analytics where people were very internally focused has turned into, you know, there's a lot of focus on how does SEO contribute to more effective journeys, more effective analytics within the firewall, right? So there's a really keen association of those two. And what was interesting at the Conductor conference was in talking to people, you know, one of our emerging areas from a product perspective is, you know, how do you take those people coming in the front door? And by the way, the front door from SEO perspective is anywhere they land on your site, not necessarily the homepage, but you know, that
Absolutely. Is
that first interaction right. with the site. And how do you make sure you're engaging them in a way that it's not the last page they look at? And
absolutely.
So a lot of good discussion around that. So certainly, I mean, if you can't spell SEO, speak SEO, bleed SEO these days, right? You're not doing marketing right. And certainly I think social is the same way, right? You know, it's what is the impact of, you know, the attention to content coming from social, and how do you maximize that? I mean, you and I had an interesting conversation, of course, around influencer marketing just a few moments ago. And, you know, that is another area where I think, as you said, right, find the right audience that an influencer has, right? And again, it's kind of that micro-targeting problem, right? And I'm a fly fisherman, so if I'm writing a fly fishing blog and I have 5,000 followers, that's probably a great audience for Orvis or Sims to come after versus, you know, having Jay-Z talk about the latest B2B marketing trend.
I'm just trying to picture Jay-Z fly fishing. And I've got to be honest, he's an impressive guy who can do a lot of things, and that's an image that just isn't working.
Yeah, it doesn't work for me as well, but I think I'd be deeply embarrassed because he could probably do it really good.
I bet he could. Actually.
And you know what's interesting about this list is it's three capabilities. Maybe it's not the right word, right? But you know, it's three kind of tools that you have in your toolbox that a marketer should use. And then this other thing that's kind of weird, right? Which is measurement. Well, how does that fit?
Right.
And of course, it fits because it's fundamental. And especially being down at the Marketing Analytics Summit, I talked to a lot of people who thought measurement was really important and also really, really hard. And, you know, I do think that, you know, one of the things that I think everybody struggles with in the measurement community and the analytics community is connecting marketing actions to business results. And I heard that at the SEO conference, a conductor, one of our pals from SAP did a fantastic presentation on that. And I heard it again and again as kind of a lament from the marketing analytics folks is that, you know, making that solid connection between business results and analytics is really hard. And so I guess what this post is saying really at the end of the day is that no matter what your marketing techniques are, if you aren't able to measure the results, A, do you know if they even mattered? But B, how do you as a marketer demonstrate you're adding value to the organization? And so, you know, I think we all have kind of deep analytics backgrounds, and so we get this. But it is surprising, A, how difficult it remains, and B, how some people still don't get it. They figure, gee, I jumped a bunch of stuff at the top of the funnel, and I did my job. And it's like, well, wait a minute. What about the middle of the funnel and the end of the funnel, right? How does this stuff progress? And so, you know, again, I'm sure some people who are listening to this are rolling their eyes. Of course, Steve, that's obvious. But I've talked to a lot of people over the past 5 weeks, and it's still a struggle.
Well, it's interesting to me. The reason it resonated with me and the reason I wanted to pull this one into the discussion today was, you know, our senior strategist, Mike Moran, has a great line that he's used for years where he says, you know, a lot of marketers got into marketing as a refuge from math, right? So I don't think it's necessarily, you know, something that enough people take seriously, right? Because they got into marketing because they liked the creative side. They liked, you know, let's create great copy. Let's create great imagery. Let's tell a great story, which is incredibly important. You absolutely must do those things. And I don't think any of us would say you shouldn't. But, right, if you don't know your numbers in 2019 and 2020, you're not going to live for very long in this business, right?
Exactly.
So it makes for an interesting transition because somebody who does know their numbers really well, and talks, you see what I did there?
That's very, very smooth.
Well, yeah, I try. But someone who does some tremendous data about business generally is Mary Meeker, who is now with Bond Internet. Mary Meeker has been around for a long time, lead investor in a number of major internet companies like Netscape and like Expedia and like Yahoo. And she puts out an annual report every year, the Internet Trends Report. Fascinating stuff. And there's a whole section this time, starts on page 122 of the 350-page deck. So there's a lot to digest.
How long does it take her to present that thing? I don't know. It's just be
actually
to watch.
Astonishingly, I've seen her presented in the past. I didn't see this year's presentation, but she literally gets through the deck in about 45 minutes.
Wow!
It is like nothing you'll ever see if you've never watched it before. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. But nonetheless, she started talking about on page 122 of the deck about data growth and its impact for companies. And there were just a couple of quotes here that I wanted to call out and see, you know, where they led the discussion today. So one is from Frank Bean, who's the CEO and president of Looker. You know, he said data is now fundamental to how people work, and the most successful companies have intelligently integrated it into everyone's daily workflow. Data is the new application.
See, right there, I think he listened to our podcast. I don't know. I think there's a little plagiarism going on here. I don't know.
We did have a bit of a discussion about this just a few weeks ago, right? About whether data is or more precisely isn't a moat. But clearly that's a message that, you know, you're starting here. So I think it might be worth reinforcing that point.
Well, you know, with the fact that he calls it an application, I think that was kind of the metaphor we were using in that, you know, it's not platform, it's the application layer. And I think he's exactly right. You know, if you are putting data to use in really interesting ways, whether that's in the technology that you're delivering to your customers or as a company that you're using to enable your business, that is the defensible thing. But if you're just creating great data lakes, I mean, great. I actually talked to somebody earlier today, and, you know, they were talking about some of the work they were doing and being able to aggregate and bring together the data in interesting ways. And, you know, they are doing some to their benefit, and they're doing some interesting things with the data. But, you know, that's not the thing that's going to make
the end game.
Yeah, it's not the end game. It's not going to take you to the next level. But there are a lot of chief data officers out there that, you know, making good money with that as their mantra. But yeah, it's how you put the data to work. And again, I love the application layer. You know, platform AWS, right, is everywhere. It's what you do with AWS. Yep. And I think the metaphor extends to data as well. It's not the data; it's what you do with the data.
Well. And kind of building on that, what's really interesting is they go on to talk about a couple of studies that they highlight. And now this is about retail specifically, but I think we would find the same would be true in B2B environments or B2B2C environments. And it just goes to show how easy data is to get.
Right.
Where, you know, Mary Meeker calls out that data and artificial intelligence used properly can improve customer satisfaction. And they cite three specific data points. One, a survey of retail customers, 91% prefer brands that provide personalized offers and recommendations. 83% are willing to passively share data in exchange for personalized experiences.
Right.
And 74% are willing to actively share data in exchange for personalized experiences.
Right.
So clearly the data is easy to get, and that seems somewhat contrary to what I think a lot of people would assume is true, because everybody likes to talk about, oh, well, privacy is so important. And I'm not saying it's not. I'm saying customers clearly seem not to care as much as they claim to.
Right. Well, it's bipolar. They're bipolar on this, right? You know, it's like, damn it, I want my privacy, and where's my customized, personalized, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, I think both things can be true, right? I think that you know, the cranky old man get off my lawn about privacy is born by the fact that I don't always trust you guys, right? You know, I don't trust you to keep and, you know, my data secure and to not share it in ways that I might not like. But if you use it in interesting ways, you know, like there's like good retargeting and bad retargeting. You know, like it's funny, I was talking to a guy from Sotheby's a couple months ago, and you know, I said, well, I'm clearly not your target market. He goes, oh, you absolutely are a target market. He goes, name something you'd like to collect. And they actually have online, I didn't know this, they have online auctions all sorts of stuff. Of course, now that I've looked at that, I'm getting retargeted for $25,000 watches all the time. course, I can't. Sure, I'm not going to buy a $25,000.
How many of those have you bought, Steve?
Yeah, just, you know, I don't want to brag about my $25,000 watch collection. So, you know, I would never buy one of those things. But regardless, it's just, you know, that was, let me see, I'm looking at the categories, right? So I passively share data. But, you know, I'm not getting retargeted on Monet's. I'm getting retargeted on the thing I was actually interested in. And it's not the annoying retargeting, which I hate, which is the, oh, here's the actual item you were looking at. They do a really nice job of things that were related to what you were looking at. Oh, we have this new thing or that new thing. So they actually do it in very interesting ways, which, you know, I see value in that. I mean, I'm certainly still not going to buy one of those watches. But but I do find that fact that when those Sotheby's retargeting ads pop up, they're actually, it feels smarter and I feel better about it, right? Whereas, you know, I've seen some really dumb retargeting, which is the retargeting of the product you already bought and you get that then for the next 3 days on Facebook.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I buy this. I buy that people can be bipolar on the topic. And I think a lot of that, again, has to do with trust and value. Right. So I trust that you're going to use my data wisely and it has some value for me lately, you know, later in the process. I do also think that a lot of companies do this really poorly. I mean, and I think that, you know, again, really dumb retargeting, I think, is an example of really poorly, but you see this, you know, on commerce sites with bad recommendations. You see this all over the place. So the key is, you know, use the data wisely and make sure it's relevant to the user in the moment to help progress their journey. And that's, I guess, the final point is, you know, it's personalized. So focus on the person and what they're trying to achieve, right, what their goal is, not what your goal is. And if, you know, don't push the product, you know, make sure that they can pull through the process.
No, makes tons of sense. Actually, it's funny that you say this. There was another great story in Retail Touchpoints, and I'm gonna hit you with a follow-on question from this. But you know, they have a study that showed 41% of shoppers say that most personalized messages still feel like mass marketing. You know, they say they go on to say they were not created with their specific needs in mind. Quote: these shoppers noted no discernible difference in the relevance of personalized versus non-personalized communications received from retailers and brands they visit often. Unquote. So that would be exactly what you're talking about. Saying, you know, it's been done badly. I guess my question to you is, okay, if that's done badly, what's done goodly look like? Right? How do you do it? What do you need to do?
So done goodly personalization is, you know, that is when you're focused on their goal, when you know enough about what they're trying to achieve to deliver a recommendation, whether it's a product recommendation or a content recommendation. I mean, it doesn't feel like scattershot. You know, like most really bad personalization, and I won't name any names here, but you know, you pick your favorite media site and just splattered across the bottom of the page are the most ungodly mix of content that is just generally, you know, clickbait. But that is probably the best example of really poor personalization. You know, I'm looking at an article about that names an actor, and now I have, you know, I have People Magazine at the bottom of my page, right? It's like, well, that's not what I'm here for, right? I'm here for this interesting tidbit of information. So I think some of those content recommendation engines, media content, you know, like some of the tabloid stuff and the clickbaity articles, that's examples of really bad personalization. And you can find flavors of that. Go to, you know, many e-commerce sites that try to emulate Amazon smarts, but don't get anywhere near it. You know, they really struggle. So I think that's bad personalization. I think what differentiates good personalization is an understanding of you and what your preferences are. And, you know, there's two ways to do it. It's kind of explicit or implicit, right? And so explicitly, you know, you either bought the data or you have first party data about this human, and you know that Tim likes a certain make of guitar and that he bought two last year and he's only bought one so far this year. So he needs another one. And you're not going to recommend, the guitar that he has. You're going to recommend maybe.
I feel seen.
Yeah. I really understand you, right? But, you know, I'm going to recommend the guitar that, you know, maybe is one level up that other people like you bought, and maybe you're ready for it. So, you know, again, it's that sort of thing that really takes into account you, the human. So that's kind of the explicit model where you have that, you're able to gather that data. And it doesn't feel like merchandising, right? It doesn't feel like, oh shit, we bought too many of these Gibsons, you know, sell one to Tim. And the other side of it is really the implicit, right? So can you, and this is what we're working on. So that's kind of the shameless plug. And so, you know, that's where you're looking at the patterns of behavior and trying to do pattern matching, right? So that the behavior that you're exhibiting on the site leads us to believe you're trying to achieve this goal. And then we test that, right? We say, hey, here's some recommended content. Does this help you progress your journey? And of course, as it doesn't, that makes the model a little smarter. The model takes another iteration and it tries to make the experience better. And so I think that's, you know, again, that where you're really trying to understand what is the goal of the customer, right? And that's where we start with, right? If we have some piece of data about what topic you're interested in, okay, great. We're going to keep you on topic. And if we could discern, gee, the pattern of behavior looks like you're trying to download a specific white paper, well, can we move you towards that white paper and recommend that? But it's always the, what are you trying to achieve? Not what are we trying to achieve? And I think that's what really differentiates good personalization from bad personalization. Now, I know that some retailers have bought too many of those guitars and they want to sell them and move them to make sure they don't sit in the warehouse. But at the end of the day, it's focusing on what goal is the customer trying to achieve, whether it's a product goal or a service goal, whether it's B2C or B2B, it doesn't matter. What's their goal and how did then you use the data you have to help them progress towards that goal?
Well, and I just building on that, I mean, what we've seen, and I know what we mostly in the lab, but certainly in some production instances already, you know, we're seeing that the better you understand the customer, the better you can merchandise the thing you have too much of too, because you understand who's the right customer for that, right? It just gets that much more successful. Your take rates get better,
et cetera, right? Exactly.
So why don't more people do this? What makes it so hard?
I think it's a combination of several things. I had a couple conversations several weeks ago, and one was with a large data company, and we were talking about behavior-based personalization, and you know, the VP of marketing kind of said, "Well, wait a minute. So it's personalization? I already got that." And I was like, oh, yes, the Monty Python. Yeah,
we already got the one.
Yeah, exactly. Immediately leapt into my mind, but I didn't put out an outrageous French accent. And but he already had their stack, their large integrated stack had a personalization engine. I said, well, oh, so how's that going? Right. So what are you seeing? Yada, yada. And he said, oh, well, we haven't turned it on yet. And as it turns out, this platform requires, you know, a content lift, right? You have to have the right content to present. It requires an IT lift because it's not, you know, point and shoot. You got to have the IT guys come in and configure it and load it. And they hadn't prioritized it. And so I think part of resources, you know, you go write the big contract for a, you know, integrated suite of technology and, you know, the things that are really important that, you know, drive value today, you know, get turned on. But things like personalization, which is not always a today thing, right? You know, you got to build the data set, you got to learn, you got to test, that gets deprioritized. And so I think unless you have like a pure B2C sort of scenario where I think personalization benefit can be realized pretty quickly. But in these long sales cycles, multiple visits, et cetera, personalization is hard to justify. And so I think that's part of it. I think it's a heavier lift than most people think. It's not just I have the technology in place, but it's do you have the content in place? And so, you know, one of the things we're focused on is how do you maximize the content you already have in a way that allows you to get some personalization benefit without having to go through the heavy content lift at a minimum and to keep the IT lift as low as possible. Now, of course, I've just said this when we just learned that 41% of shoppers say personalized messages feel like mass marketing. So, you know, using the content you already have to kind of deliver personalization, you know, it'll be interesting to see how much of a lift we can create in the results in the long run. But as we learned in the other topic, right, was that 59% of shoppers probably benefited from a personalized message, right? So I think that using your current content to enhance customer experience and do that more effectively has some real value. And I think that that is certainly our kind of market thesis. And, you know, as you stated, we're with our beta customers on the early product, you know, we're testing that right now. And so it'll be very interesting to see how much of a lift they get. I mean, we're already, again, expecting some lift. But, you know, again, if we can really drive a more personalized experience and reduce the lift from a content and technology perspective, that I think is a winner. That's going to kind of break the boundary for personalization for those companies that struggle to get it done.
Absolutely. Well, and you raise a great point because you talked about something a moment ago that I want to drill down on. And there was another article about this that we'll link to in the show notes. But you talked about, you know, how you integrate, you know, the IT lift of plugging the different things into one another. And there was a great article on chiefmartech.com where they talked about three trends in the next age of MarTech. And one of the three was the need to support ecosystems, right? It can't just be, hey, here's a point solution or here's a, you know, here's a one-off thing. It's how well do they play with others?
Yeah. I'd
just love to hear your thoughts on that and how that can help people do this more effectively.
Yeah. So it was really warmed my heart when I saw our logo for the first time on the Chief MarTech, you know, grid of companies that do stuff in the MarTech space. Right. Of course, my heart sank a bit when it took me 20 minutes to find us because there's 7,000 other companies on that list. You know, it's very interesting. And going back to that discussion I was having with a data company, they were an Adobe shop. So, you know, we're an Adobe shop and, you know, we're kind of this fully integrated suite of technology and that's mm-hmm. what we focus on.
Yep.
And one of the things they were doing was actually getting rid of a lot of their kind of best of breed systems, mostly because coming back to the measurement topic at the top of our podcast, they couldn't mm-hmm. demonstrate value. Oops.
Right.
And, you know, he was still had the door open to some best of breed technologies, but they had to demonstrate value, right? You had to have measurable value to that kind of exceeds that in the suite, especially if it duplicates function, much like the personalization discussion we were having a moment ago. What was really interesting, mm-hmm. though, is everybody I talked to, you know, I have kind of three standard questions I ask every person I talk to in the digital marketing space. And I come back to this topic of integrated suite versus best of breed. And, mm-hmm. you know, what's emerging and what was very interesting to see it reinforced by this article, and maybe everybody read the article, so these smart executives knew what to say. But, but you know, it was basically integration, right? Can your thing, do you have an API, right? Most people don't even know what that means, but they ask it anyway, right? Do you have an API? Right. And that really is the idea, right? Can you take your data, back to our data point, and use it in more interesting ways than just what you're using it for? And the answer has to be yes to that, right? If you are going to compete in the MarTech space these days, you have to have the ability to send your data elsewhere and to be able to do it easily. And right now we're working, you know, it's one of the things we moved up on our delivery schedule was our API, you know, some improvements mm-hmm. to our API, because our API works really well internally for all the function we need to, but it's not mm-hmm. as good as it could be as kind of a public API. And so we've got to do better at that because, you know, data put to use is really, really powerful. Data as an application, very, very powerful. But if your data is trapped within your best of breed thing, I think that's the kiss of death for a best of breed company, right? You're going to die a painful death. You have to set your data free and make it available elsewhere. Hopefully your application is demonstrating value, but if it's not, or if it could demonstrate more value by having that data consumed elsewhere, you know, get on it.
That sounds like a perfect place to wrap up, Steve. I mean, that's it gets back to that whole idea though of why measurement and why data is such an important skill for B2B content marketing.
Right? Amen.
So I think it's a perfect place to wrap up.
Amen.
Any last thoughts before let folks move on with their day?
Oh, no. I just got to get my fingers whacking on some proposals that are due this
evening. Fair
enough. So go get some business done.
Fair enough. Well, Steve, as ever, always a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks very much, Tim.
Fantastic. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Search Chat is brought to you by Solo Segment. Solo Segment is a technology company focused on site search analytics and AI-driven content discovery to improve search results, increase customer satisfaction, and unlock revenue for your company. Solo Segment, make your search smarter, and learn more at solosegment.com. If you like what you've heard today, click on the subscribe links you can find at solosegment.com/podcast, on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, or wherever fine, on Twitter using the Twitter handle @SoloSegment, or you can drop us an email at info@solosegment.com. Again, that's info@solosegment.com. For Search Chat, I'm Tim Peter. I hope you have a great rest of the week. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll look forward to chatting with you next time here on Search Chat. Until then, take care, everybody. Buddy.